Chapter 30. Dawn had scarce broken when Logalog put the finishing touches to the main frame of the gate. Martin peered down from the edge of the hole in the mountainside, holding tight to Dinny beside him.
So this is what the other side of the mountain looks like, eh, Din?
Oh, ain't much to be seen, though, Martin.
The sloping side of the mountain was visible, but beyond that, the bottom land was a bed of thick white mist as far as the eye could see. Lord Cavier joined them.
What lies below, I do not know,
he told them.
Thank you, Logalog. Thank you for your good work. Soon my tribe will be safe once more. We will be complete masters of all Bat Mountpit.
Logalog patted the heavy timber frame, made mainly from the wreckage of Waterwing.
Aye, no sign of that owl now, though this gate should keep it away. That had a few sharp prods in its feathery bottom. Don't like owls myself.
The sun was up and shining bright within an hour, but instead of clearing the mist, it seemed to make it thicker. Martin and his friends were eager to continue the quest. Politely, they refused entreaties from the bats to stay as long as they wished, though with a tinge of regret because of the kindness and hospitality shown them by the tribe of Bat Mount Pit. Lord Cavier presented them with haversacks of fresh food and drink. The great bat stayed inside the darkness of the exit hole with his tribe, away from the glaring sunlight. Martin shook him heartily by the paw.
Now put that barrier up as soon as we leave. Better safe than sorry, my friend.
The little bats clung to Dinny.
Fly back through the earth and then visit us one day. Visit us one day,
they begged. The mole was visibly moved.
Don't ye fret, little battens. This year mole'll see sometime.
Logalog gave final instructions as to the care and maintenance of the gate. All three then stood for a moment in the awkward silence that often marks the parting of friends. Martin was about to say that Gomph would have composed a ballad for the occasion, but he turned away with a sigh. Adjusting the sword hilt about his neck, he faced the outer world. They began the sloping descent, with Lord Cavier's whispered farewell in their ears.
Our spirit flies with you. May you find what you quest for, what you quest for.
The going proved not too difficult. They dug their paws into the loose screen shale, half walking, half sliding.
If only Gomph were here,
Martin could not help remarking.
He'd remember the exact words of the Sky Furrow poem. Let me see now. Land lost in mist and grey-brown treachery, or something like that. I can't recall it properly.
Dinny braked himself against a boulder.
Nay, nor do I. Proper old puddin'heads as be.
Logalog took a chunk of rock and tossed it outward. It fell down into the mist, vanishing completely.
Usually some kind of swamp or marshland on the mist like that. We'd best keep our wits about us down there,
he warned. It was midday when they finally reached the bottom land. The mist was dense and high above their heads. It blocked out the sky, leaving the travellers in a world of swirling fog. Dark squelchy moss and slimy weeds carpeted the ground, dotted with wide areas of evil-smelling fungus. Here and there small rivulets ran, as if trying to find a way out of this oppressive region. Dinny gazed into the mist.
Here, be that summit moving over yon?
They stopped to peer. Logalog rubbed his eyes.
It might be. Then again, it might be the mist playing tricks. If you let your imagination run away with you, all sorts of shapes start popping up.
The travellers leaned against a large humped rock to take their noon meal. Martin broke off some bread.
I've got the strangest feeling that we're being watched,
he said, chewing as he spoke. Dinny tapped the rock.
Deggin Clor be a-tellin' oi that too, Martin.
Behind them, six huge toads, bearing the ends of a twisted reed net, leapt from the top of the rock, passing right over the travellers' heads. They landed square on the ground, neatly trapping the three friends tightly underneath the net. One toad poked a trident at them.
Glock, frog, glom, bat. Catch and caught 3 year.
Samina pushed her party hard into the fastnesses of Mossflower. She halted frequently to sniff the earth or trace the paw prints in soft ground.
No mistake. This is them, all right. Look here. My traitor brother. Carrying something heavy by these deep prints. Keep going. Dawn can't be too far off. We'll give those woodlanders a breakfast they won't forget.
High in a tree above Samina's force, Barklad the squirrel sat muttering to himself.
Oh, too many heads to count. Looks like most of Katia has been mobilised to track us down.
He vaulted off across the high green terraces to make his report. Clud pointed with his spear.
Blood spots, m'lady.
The Wildcat Queen inspected sticky dark red flecks brushed off on the leaves of a lilac bush.
Otter. That must be the one who tricked us into thinking he was a fox. Patchcoat. He took the arrow that was meant for Gingerbeer.
Clud ground his teeth.
Patchcoat, eh? I wonder one myself, wounded or not. He's wearing my captain's cloak.
Samina pushed onward.
Take who you please, but Gingerbeer's mine. Leave him to me,
she ordered. The soldiers marched forward confidently, made brave by sheer weight of numbers. Not far from Camp Willow, the ancient gnarled tree that was its namesake bent lithe boughs over the clear flowing river. Beneath its branches, the dawn light filtered through onto the party, who had gathered round the last resting place of the mask. Smooth river boulders in a cairn marked the spot. Flowers and decorated otter slings were laid on the grave in tribute to a fallen comrade. Skipper sighed heavily, turning away to join Lady Amber, who was listening to Barklad's report. Cold fury had overtaken the otter leader's grief. At his insistence, there would be none but otters to face the oncoming hordes of Katia. Lady Amber wisely acceded to her friend's wishes, but not before she had outlined a few plans of her own.
Do what you have to, Skipper, and good luck to you. The whole of Katia is abroad in Mossflower, so be careful. However, this is an opportunity we must not miss. I have sent messengers to Brockhall. No doubt the Formole and his crew would welcome a chance to inspect Katia while the cat's away. I will take my force to make sure they get there and back in safety. Agreed?
Skipper greased his sling with slippery bark and checked the rows of dangerous-looking otter javelins sticking point down into the bank.
Agreed.
Ashleg was first to sight the river, heavily swathed in morning mists from bank to bank.
We've been here before, m'lady,
he reminded her.
This is where we lost Gloomer. Surely this isn't where they have their headquarters.
The Queen of the Thousand Eyes peered into the mists ahead.
No matter. This is where the trail leads. Here is where they'll be. What's that?
Clud stood forward, brandishing his spear.
It's that otter, m'lady. Look, the insolent hound is still wearing my cloak. Let me at him!
Samina nodded toward the spectral figure, which stood wreathed in the mists.
Get to it, Clud,
she commanded.
Obviously they know we've been following. I'll check around for surprises. We won't be fooled a second time. Oh, and Clud.
Yes, m'lady.
See you finish the job properly if you want to wear that cloak as a captain again.
Hefting his spear, Clud advanced on the cloaked figure.
You just leave it to me, Majesty. Right, Patchcoat, let's settle this once and for all,
he challenged. Skipper stepped out of the tendrils of mist, shedding the cloak.
I'm ready for you, weasel. The one you call Patchcoat was my brother. You're not fit to lick his paws. I will give you your cloak back to take with you to the gates of Dark Forest. They have a special place for cowards there.
Stung by the insult, Clud bellowed at rage as he charged. Skipper allowed himself a grim smile of satisfaction. Flexing his powerful limbs, he hurled himself like an uncoiling spring at the oncoming weasel. Disregarding weapons, the two creatures locked together on the ground, snarling and tearing at each other like savage beasts. Martin, Dinny and Logalog struggled helplessly, floundering about in the net like fish out of water. The more they moved, the tighter they were entwined. Martin realised this and lay still.
I am Martin the Warrior,
he called out.
These are my friends, Dinny and Logalog. Why have you done this to us? We mean you no harm. We are only travellers passing through. Turn us loose, please.
The toads turned to each other. They made unintelligible clicking and galloping noises, seeming to find the whole business highly amusing. Their leader jabbed warningly at the captives.
Curr, you're quiet now. For a mouse, damp watch say, come now.
The prisoners were dragged unceremoniously along the muddy ground. Other toads came out of the mist to join the procession. When they finally reached their destination, the captives were surrounded by a veritable army of the creatures. The leader threw the net ends over a stake driven into the ground. He spread his webbed claw membranes.
Crrr, proxy here. One mole, two mouse, marsh green, say what?
Seated on a huge fungus carved into the likeness of a high throne was a toad bigger than the rest. Far more repulsive, too. It had no warts and was a slimy, wet green colour, its great translucent eyes filmed over as it blinked at the captives. Fireflies danced in opaque plant holders, and four more toads stood guard around the throne with tridents. The big toad gave an ungainly hop down to the ground and stood in front of the trio, blinking ceaselessly, its great wobbly throat pulsating.
What fine damp watch! Fur mouse make happy, Marsh Green!
Martin decided that politeness was at an end. They were being treated like trophies. The warrior mouse's voice was loud and angry.
See here, Marsh Green, or whatever they call you! You've no right to treat us like this! Now set us free this instant!
He demanded. The assembly of toads gave a bubbly cry of shock at the blatant disrespect to their ruler. His eyes bulged like button mushrooms.
Split of rot! Mouth shut, mouse fur! Cheeky beast! Take three! Throw in scream hole!
The company of toads waddled and hopped excitedly, brandishing their tridents.
Look over there,
Logalog whispered to Martin.
I might have known it wouldn't be spring without those two weeds sprouting again.
It was the newt and the grass snake, Whipscale and Deathcoil. The unsavoury pair saw they were noticed and grinned wickedly.
Do you fancy standing on my tail again, shrew?
You three are for it now.
Diddy shook the net.
Go boil your heads, sly beasts.
Deathcoil stood almost on the tip of his tail.
Not until we've seen you thrown into the scream hole with the snakefish.
Before they had a chance to find out what Deathcoil was talking about, the trio were dragged along in the net once more. The journey was not so long this time. It was far speedier because the net was hauled by many more toads. They halted at what appeared to be an overgrown well. Its large circular bore disappeared deep into the earth. Thick ferns drooped about the edges, growing down into the pit. Marsh Green came waddling up with the snake and the newt. They were flanked by toads carrying firefly lanterns on their trident forks.
Snakefish feed well. Marsh Green bring you farmhouse.
The toad ruler called down the dark well hole. A toad presented Marsh Green with an elaborately carved trident. He jabbed it ceremoniously at the captives in the net, then jabbed it three times toward the well. The assembled toads flattened themselves against the ground, chanting,
Snake fish, mighty one, stay in stream hole. Eat a fur mouse, leave him alone, damp watch.
Martin and his friends lay apprehensively listening as the chant grew louder. Suddenly it stopped. The toads holding the net spilled it open, tugging it backward vigorously. Martin, Dinny and Logalog were shot forward through the tracery of overhanging ferns deep into the scream hole. Samina had detailed her archers to scatter volleys into the trees and brush in case of concealed woodlanders. They fired off a desultory salvo. Then all else was forgotten as they broke off to watch the battle between Skipper and Clud at the water's edge. Jaws locked, the combatants rolled over and over. Loam and sand flew in all directions as they bit, grappled and kicked, raking each other with heavy claws. The very ground shook at their wildness. Fear hung on the dawn air. Blood spattered into the river. It was not too long before Clud realised he was outmatched by the power and fury of Skipper. Now he was fighting for his life. The weasel tried to pull free from the maddened otter, but to no avail. His breath sobbed raggedly in his throat as he strained to reach the spear he had dropped in the first charge. Skipper, aware of what Clud was up to, squirmed over, rolling him in the opposite direction to the weapon. Suddenly, Clud grabbed a pawful of sand and ground it into his opponent's eyes. Temporarily blinded, Skipper furiously tried to clear his vision, unwittingly freeing Clud. Seizing his chance, Clud bounded up and snatched the spear. With a savage scream, he charged at his flawed adversary, levelling the point at Skipper's unprotected neck. Through a sandy haze, Skipper saw the weasel coming. He rolled to one side. As he did, his paw came in contact with the captain's cloak he had shed upon the bank. Sweeping it up and over in one continuous movement, the otter netted Clud head and haunches. Falling over backwards, Skipper felt the breeze of the spear point pass his ear. He thrust upward mightily. All four paws connected squarely with Clud's body. The weasel shot high in the air, enveloped by the cloak, landing with a cry of shock. His fall had been broken upon the otter javelins that stood fixed in the ground. Otter javelins are pointed at both ends. Chaos broke loose. Sarmina hurled her troops forward at Skipper. A band of otters broke cover, stopping them with javelins and sling stones. Skipper bounded gracefully tail over ears into the river, followed by his crew, who took the liberty of rattling a last furious salvo at the soldiers of Katir. Pushed on by those behind, several of the front ranks spilled into the water. Sarmina was among the first to go headlong into the river. Panic overtook the wildcat as she floundered in the water.
Out! Get me out!
She screamed.
Quick, before they lose the bike!
Hurriedly, she was dragged up onto the bank. Further upstream, there was a barking laugh of victory as Skipper's head broke the surface.
The weasel got his cloak back, cat. It's pinned to him.
The river closed in a swirl on the last of the otters. Sarmina raced up and down the bank, snatching spears from her soldiers, hurling them vindictively at the water.
Come out, woodlanders! Stand and fight!
She challenged. Brog, the weasel companion of Clud, had taken the opportunity of extracting the cloak from the javelins on his friend's body. He squatted at the river's edge, washing it through. Few rips, bit of blood, stale. It should clean up nicely, he thought. Suddenly, the cloak was being pulled into the water, dragging Brog along with it. Ashleg kicked him soundly on the bottom.
Let go, fool! They've got the pike out!
Brog had never let anything go so quickly. Bella appeared on the opposite bank.
Stay out of our woods, cat,
she said, pointing a blunt claw at Sarmina.
Take your vermin away from Mossflower and leave us alone, or you will be defeated some day.
Sarmina ran to the water's edge, but halted at the sight of a dorsal fin patrolling the river. Her voice was a hoarse scream.
I am the Queen of the Thousand Eyes. I rule all Mossflower. One time I might have shown you mercy, but not now. This is war to the death. Your death, Badger. Archers!
Before an arrow could be strung, Bella had gone.